We just sang about no one can stop God, and God had a plan. Even though in this passage it doesn't tell you about God's big plan, this passage has quite a bit to do with God's big plan. Many of the details of God's big plan were a mystery, but the basic plan had been made known through God promising himself, and then through many prophecies subsequent to this passage too. Sorry, I've written 1 Kings, haven't I? It wasn't a secret. It was out there, basically, that King David would have after him a kingdom that would not end, a kingdom that would be an everlasting kingdom, and that there would be a great king who would come from his line, the line of David, who would be a king who would reign forever. And he would be what the Old Testament calls the Messiah, the New Testament calls the Christ, which basically means the King of Kings and Lord of Lords. And he would be King and Lord of all things in heaven and on earth. And his reign and rule would never end. Not a plan that Satan liked. And so just as Satan undoubtedly inspired Herod to kill all those baby boys when Jesus was born, so here, Athaliah was being used, I'm sure, by Satan to seek to destroy all these princes and heirs to David's throne. She basically sought to bring an end to David's line in one final and foul swoop. And this happened after she'd heard that her son, who was the present king, Ahaziah of Judah, king of Judah, had been killed. If you've been following this series, you'll know that back in chapter 9, there was this rebel commander, Jehu, who basically killed the two kings at once. He killed the king of Israel and he killed the king of Judah. This left this gap. The kingdom had been divided previous to this, so there was one nation of Israel, but they got split into two kingdoms, kingdom of Judah in the south, kingdom of Israel in the north. And in an attempt to unite those kingdoms, actually, this ungodly king of Israel, Ahab, and his wife Jezebel, they sought to kind of get a bit of an alliance through marriage. And so it was that Athaliah, the person we're reading about here who kills the princes, was married to the king of Judah. And at the time, the king of Judah was wanting to be a godly king, and he gets married to the daughter of Jezebel, the worshipper of Baal. And so this marriage alliance is fraught with danger. There's one guy wanting to be godly and serve God, and the other brought up worshipping foreign, false, fake gods. We don't know what their marriage was like, really. We don't know how much strife that caused, but this passage is a reminder, actually, that it's another example in the scriptures of marriage between someone who's following after God and someone who isn't is fraught with danger. We don't necessarily see what it meant in the short term, but in the long term, we certainly do, because what happens in this passage is beyond shocking. Athaliah, who's lived a life of privilege all her life, firstly as a princess in a palace, then as a queen, or the husband's queen at least, and then as the queen mother. Now she wants to be queen and sole monarch of Judah, despite originally being from Israel. In order to do that, after hearing that her son has been killed, she basically tries to seize power. She does seize power by killing all of the king's kids, her grandchildren. She wanted to remove them from the throne in order to, well, rule herself. Her serving satanic gods and serving her own selfish ambition led her to do this incredibly wicked thing, killing off her grandchildren. She was not going to let the kids get in the way of career, plans, ambition. Young men, therefore, of royalty, with so much promise, so much potential, who knows what they could have achieved with their lives had it not been that their lives were cut off at an early age. And now we've got this picture of, it doesn't describe it, the Bible often doesn't, but you can imagine it, these mutilated bodies piled up, tossed onto a rubbish heap. And it sounds like it's something out of our world, but actually, as I read this passage, for the as I read it the first time, I felt God was saying, this is familiar ground. And I realized that I'm on shaky ground to even talk about what I'm going to talk about for a few minutes. I'm not going to talk about it as much as I was. But as soon as I read this, I thought about how this nation is killing thousands of kids every day through what we call abortion. And I understand there's all sorts of struggles that people go through which bring them to that point where they would abort a child in their womb. But so much of it actually is like Athalia, it's selfish ambition. It's personal preference. It's a desire for freedom. And so we as a nation have come to this point where we dispose of, destroy the lives of thousands of kids every year. And the photo there really, obviously that's the best, nicest photo I could show, in a sense, because while this nation refers to him or her as a fetus, actually you can see they're actually a human being. I don't know if you've been to Wembley. I have. I don't know if you've seen Wembley on the telly. Thousands of people. Times that by two, the people you see in Wembley, times it by two, and that is almost exactly how many children are killed in the womb in this country alone every single year, about 180,000. And then think about those people in the crowd. Look at those people of all ages and stages, of all colours and creeds, children, young people, old people, and think about what their lives could have been, because think of Wembley empty, because they're not there actually. But there could have been someone who found a cure for cancer. There could have been someone who led this nation better than it has been led in the past. There could have been someone who produced a fantastic piece of music. There could have been great mums and dads and grandparents, friends, lovers, people we as a nation deemed not having the right to life, or their right is not as important as our career, our comfort, and I understand cost difficulties too. I do sometimes think that when we look back in history, or when others after us look back in history, they're going to read about the Holocaust, and they're going to read about this generation and abortion and see it in a similar light. And I keep saying we. I don't know if you knew this, but 98% of abortions are funded on the NHS, which is our tax. So we're kind of caught up in this. Like I say, I could talk to you about all kinds of stuff to do with abortion. And if the kids were going to be in it, I felt it wasn't appropriate, so we don't need to say too much more. But 3% of abortions in the UK are because of disability or because of danger to the mother's health. Only 3%. The other 180,000 or so are because what we've said before, preference and choice. Whatever that looks like, without making massive judgments, that's what I understand it to be. There's a politician, Lord Shinquin. He's been disabled since birth. He's a politician, has been for many years, and he's now in the House of Lords. And he says current legislation in the UK especially is a license to kill. And then he specifies to kill disabled children, because you can actually kill a child up until birth if they're found to be disabled in the womb. Now this is all massively tragic. So what's the message, Chris? Well, what can we do about it? I guess that's the message, and that's why the title of the sermon is called Save the Children. But I'm not just wanting to talk about the children in the womb. We know that children are being born into a broken generation, really, aren't they? And there's all kinds of struggles that young people in our broken generation are facing because of the breakdown of family and because of the society we live in. And so there's a need not only to save the children in the womb, but save the children who are growing up in this broken generation. And what's it going to take to be involved in saving the children? Well, I think the next slide gives us three things: courage, compassion, commitment. And these are three things that we see in this lady, Jehosheba. I don't know how you say her name, Jehosheba. You know, what she does here is fantastic. Although Athaliah thought she'd killed all the princes, one baby survives, one of the heirs to the throne survives, the line of David continues because of Jehosheba, because of this lady. She saves this one surviving child, Joash, who was King Ahaziah's son. He's not able to help himself. He can't do anything about his situation. He's unable to even walk. He's only 1 year old. He can do nothing to save himself. He needed a savior. And she, as God's servant, comes to him as a type of Christ, saving him from perishing, saving him from the hands of this destructive woman. Now, she is a relation to King Ahaziah's sister, in fact, and so that makes her either daughter or stepdaughter of Athaliah. So she's very much close family. She's, in fact, the aunt of Joash. She's also married to I can't say these word names. You did amazing earlier on, Stuart. Jehoiada. He's the priest. Basically, she's married to the priest. They live in the house of God. They live in the temple. And basically, she takes Joash to the temple where he can be brought up in the house of God, in the household of God, amongst God's people. The equivalent today is the church. The child was saved by a servant of God who then kept him safe in the household of God and amongst God's people. And she is massively important, even though you've probably never heard of her. She's described by someone as being the lady who saved Christmas, because she saved this last heir to David's throne that kept his line alive, which would eventually lead to Jesus Christ. And if it wasn't for her, then this line of David would be eradicated and Christmas prevented, is the thinking. Obviously, God is sovereign. God is in control. God uses his people for his plans and his purposes. But we can still learn from her today, because in many ways she could be any one of us. And so maybe if we go back to the other slide, so he's brought up in the house of God, and learn from her these three areas that she shows to us through her life and example. Because I think this passage does serve to challenge us as a church to have a kind of attitude, a heart like hers, but it also shows us what's involved to actually make a difference in saving the children. Whether that's from the physical destruction that we've been talking about in the womb, or whether that's from the emotional and psychological destruction of being in this broken generation. But I also want to go a little step further and say it's not just about saving children. Actually, this passage can talk to us all about being involved in rescuing all people from spiritual destruction, saving, being involved in their salvation. But it takes courage. And so when you look at Jehosheba, she was a woman of courage. She put herself at risk. Surely, Athaliah, if she's prepared to kill all the grandkids, then if she found out she was doing this and she did this, she too, her life would be taken and be in danger. But she was prepared to do that. The church needs people to be people of courage. Even in this area of abortion, it's just, you know, you're considered almost wicked to say it's wrong. And so we're afraid to speak. It's a kind of thing we can't really say. So many of the things I could show you and tell you, you feel like you can't. We won't be popular if we talk about this or make a fuss about this. You'll get enemies. You'll get opposition. But our compassion needs to overcome our fears and cause us to have the courage. She was clearly a woman of courage and compassion. She couldn't bear the thought of this baby being destroyed. So she did what her heart of compassion told her to do, and she saved the child. She intervened and looked after this child. Not only did she save him, but looked after him and brought him up, her and her husband, the priest, in the household of God. If you've been in this church a while, you know it's a long tradition of serving the community through children and youth work. In fact, this church was founded through children and youth work. And it's important that we continually evaluate and reflect on our burden still for children and young people today. But as I said earlier, what about people in general who are perishing too? One of the most popular songs we sing at the Slade and Abbey Wood is Everyone Needs Compassion. And we look at Bathsheba again and we see how she had that compassion to save. And how willing are we to get involved in seeing that happen? Yet everyone needs compassion. Everyone needs a saviour. How willing are we to get involved in making sure they know the saviour? And we need to see, that's the third point, that it's for the long haul, this commitment to see change, to see lives transformed, to see lives saved. Her involvement wasn't just about saving him from certain death. This was a big commitment for her and her husband to take this child into their household, but also for the next 7 years to hide him away, ensure that no one guessed or could work out what was going on. And so that must have required a lot of commitment and a lot of cost, a lot of difficulty. She was willing to pay a price to get involved, to make a difference, to rescue Joash and see him grow up and move on to eventually be the king. Now, was that a good investment of her life? Well, I think we have a verse on the screen from 2 Chronicles 24, verse 2, the next one. Joash tells us in another book, did what was right in the eyes of the Lord all the years of Jehoiada the priest. So basically, those 6 years in his home shaped the destiny of that child, Joash. You know, what better place to be brought up than in the house of God, in the household of God, to receive security, to receive shelter, to find salvation, guidance, wisdom, love and help amongst God's people. And so it is, again, as we look at this broken generation, as we look at young people and children who have no clue about God, who are maybe being brought up in families where Jesus is just a swear word, the opportunity is presented to us still today to be able to influence them as this couple did influence the future king of their nation. So you can see how important this couple is in God's big plan of salvation, and that's fantastic to see God at work in their lives, in using them for the big plan. But let me suggest, you know, again, this could be any one of us influencing, making a difference in the lives of individuals. Because again, as an individual, he grew up to be a man who was seeking to do the right thing, doing what was right in the eyes of the Lord. Later on in the chapter that we read, we see how through him, he not only he was drawn to God, but he drew others in the nation to God through his life, through his commitment. So this couple is a great testimony to us, and we can learn so much from them that we should be involved in seeking, with God's help, to save the children, seeking also to save those who are perishing. And I just wanted to show a number of little videos. I think we've got time. They're really short. But just to give us ideas, really, how we can get involved. What does this look like? Practically speaking, what can we do? So let's look at this first video and see some of these young people, what they're doing in Ireland, for one example. So that's the first.
Every day is worth living. Every life is worth living. And that's why we lend our voices to those that don't have one, and speak out for those whose lives are under threat from abortion. Abortion is the greatest injustice of our generation. It ends a tiny life, and it hurts mothers, fathers, families and society. We work together to educate and raise awareness of the truth about abortion, and to protect mothers and babies.
This is the biggest issue of my generation, and it's up to us to speak out against the injustice of abortion, and to speak up for those who have no voice.
Education is key. The public deserve to know the truth about this crucial issue.
Abortion is bad medicine. It doesn't cure, it kills.
Everyone should have the right to life, not just the planned, the fortunate, or the perfect. Our laws should protect our most vulnerable. Without the right to life, what other rights can there be?
When they say abortion is a woman's choice, they're forgetting about someone, the unborn child. We really need to have an honest debate on this issue.
As a progressive society, we should wrap our arms around the most vulnerable and not offer them violence as a solution to their problems.
My baby's heart started to beat at just 21 days old. She's alive and kicking and deserving of life like every other baby. Life is beautiful and worth protecting.
Abortion kills children and harms women. There's a better way for both mothers and babies.
Every life is precious and should be respected.
We should love them both, mother and baby, because there's always a better answer than abortion.
Because life is worth it. And that's why we volunteer with Youth Defence, Ireland's most active, most visible and most vocal pro-life organisation. Join Youth Defence today. One person can make a difference, and that person could be you.
So one person can make a difference and that person could be you. Maybe that's something that you feel you should be seeking to make a noise about. Notice in this passage as well how this couple invested 7 years of their lives into this young person. But actually that verse from 2 Chronicles tells us that the priest was kind of by his side throughout his life. And he was in it for the long haul. There's thousands of kids, I think it's about 15,000 in the UK, waiting to be adopted or fostered right now. Maybe again as a church we could consider getting involved in that. For many of them, the decision has been made by others. Maybe it's through death that they're in that situation. Maybe it's through other reasons that they may not want actually to be not with their families yet. However, they need to be in a place of safety. And what better place, as we said earlier, what better place than be in the household of God, to be brought up within the family of the church, in a Christian family as well as with the support of the church family. Will it be costly? Yes. We can tell you that already from a year's experience. But what better place for a child to be brought up than within the family of God?
I used to work with care leavers. I've seen children fall into some of these categories, become one of the statistics. But behind every number is a person desperate to be loved and known. There was David. His address history read more like a novel than a short section on a form. He had 10 placement changes in 9 years before the age of 17, including 3 different children's homes. That's 10 different sets of relationships, addresses, and carers to get to know. He entered adulthood lacking skills and opportunities, let alone motivation. And there was Sarah, in and out of young offenders institutes and foster care, dropped out of school before the age of 16, desperately committed to an abusive boyfriend and the hope of drugs and money. She entered adulthood with no direction, anchored to a relationship which stopped her from fulfilling her potential. Over the years in that job, I noticed a consistent theme. The children whose earliest placement became a home for good had significantly better life outcomes than those children who had to constantly adapt to new relationships and environments. And that's why I'm so pleased to be working for Home for Good, because we can make a difference. The church can provide homes for good. But we're not promoting happily ever after. Things will still be tough. Loving each other requires us to dig deep to see the best in each other. And when love feels hard, we look to Jesus. The Bible says that God is love, and when His love transforms us from the inside out, we find ourselves better able to love others fully. It is amazing how powerful the simplicity of love, acceptance, and belonging is to children who have never experienced it. Children are waiting. Could you stand with them and give them a hope and a future? Could you consider fostering or adoption? And would you stand with those you know who are already fostering and adopting? Could you ensure that they are more supported and welcome in your church? And would you stand with us? Home for Good needs money to carry on making a difference. We're a small charity with a massive vision. Could you help us to inspire and equip churches to champion the cause of looked after children and find more homes for good? Together, let's change the trajectory for children in care. Let's find homes for every child who needs one.
Well, what else can we get involved in? Well, if we're parents, if we're grandparents, we're part of the church family, then even like tonight, we've been reminded of the importance of our responsibility to our own children, to bring them up in the ways of God. But it's a collective, shared responsibility. I think, again, it's getting tougher to do youth work. It's getting tougher to be a parent, I'm sure. And so we need everybody involved. I've said this before. An African proverb is, it takes a village to bring up a child. And that's such a great truth there. But for us as a family, church family, I think that applies. It takes a whole church to bring up a child. And as we said already as well, what better place for children, young people, those in care as well, to be brought up in the things of God. Well, I had another video, but I'm not going to show that, but it's on youth work and children's work, why we should still be doing it. And again, as I said earlier, as a church, we continue need to be reviewing that and looking at that. Maybe in the last few years, less and less people have been involved in children and youth work, certainly in the last couple of decades. Maybe that's just because life circumstances have changed, or maybe it is because we've lost a bit of our vision and we need to reflect on that individually as well as a church. So this passage challenges us in many ways about being faithful servants of God, particularly in relation to saving the children. But it also, again, speaks to us about saving, being involved in the saving of all those who are perishing. But as I close, what does this passage teach us about God? It's been challenging us and about our lives and what we should be doing. But what does it teach us about God? Well, God has a sovereign plan, and as we sang, nothing can stop it. He is faithful to his promises. He is powerful, as we sang, and he will do what he has decided and promised. He promised David that through his house, through his kingdom, there would be an everlasting kingdom. The Messiah would come, the King of Kings. And despite Satan's best attempts to destroy the line of David, our God is greater than Satan, faithful and able to bring to pass that which he has promised. And so we see in this passage, fast forward, there's not time to look at many of the details there, but Joash, a descendant of David, finally is crowned king. And the kingly line continues all the way to Christ. Nothing can stop that. Not Herod, not the religious leaders, not Pilate, or the Romans, not even the cross or the grave, because Jesus, he rose again. And he's declared through rising again, although he already is King of Kings and Lord of Lords before he even came to earth, but he's declared, he's shown, he's proven, he's seen to be King of Kings, Lord of Lords, and he's going to reign forever and ever, and his kingdom will not end. God's plan cannot be stopped, and God's promises will not be thwarted. They will be fulfilled. And we see this even in what's on offer to us, in Joash being a type. He's saved. He's kept safe in the house of God. He's brought up in the church. And then he's crowned king and he receives an inheritance as a king. And that's what Jesus has made possible for each and every one of us. If we put our trust in him, we can be saved from perishing, from certain death, eternal separation from God forever. And instead we can receive his shared inheritance, a kingly inheritance, heaven itself, all because of what Jesus has done. So let's serve, if we've already received that, let's serve the King in the short time we have on earth. Come on, let's arise and serve our God. Let's sing that together. Let's remind each other as we close. And we use this as our closing time together. As we finish this song, that will be the end of the service. Let's sing this to each other. Oh, church, arise. Put the armor on. Get involved in seeing lives changed for his glory and for their blessing.